episode 26 of the JockX podcast. Today's special guest and getting a real update on his journey to Mount Everest is Tyson Poppelstone. And man, I'm super stoked to have him back on the show because he has been doing some crazy amazing things in the time since last episode where we had him on episode 9 for you folks who haven't listened. And it was also episode 2. So third time on the show. And man, I'm stoked to have him here because we cover some amazing stuff and get really in-depth views from him on a whole range of things, particularly climbing the mountain. And I watched the movie with him just recently, the Everest movie, where basically, without giving away the ending, a few of them do pass away on top of the mountain, are still there today. And we really go through the very real challenges and dangers he faces up there and the chance that he might not come back. He might be stuck up there forever, like many other people in the past have done. And we really explore that. And it's pretty intense a bit emotional at times even too, because this is, a very good friend of mine, and it's a massive journey that he's undertaking. It's only 6 months away. So we're really building up for him on this episode and really get some in-depth from him about the whole journey. And if you're also listening to this, he's just about to go on to a national football show here in Australia. And I guess if you guys listen to this episode for the first time after seeing him on the show, welcome. Excited you're here. This man's an absolute star, and you're going to enjoy this, next 40 or so minutes listening to this guy, because he has so many insights. He's overcome so much to get to where he is right now. And with the final run-up to the big journey and the big, launch up the mountain, it's exciting time. So it's great to have him back on the show and going through all these kinds of things. So guys, as always, man, make sure you let your friends and family know about this one, because Tyson's journey is incredible and really passing it on. And, next time you catch up with a mate, tell him to get onto this episode in particular, because Tyson is the man, basically, with taking under this, with considering Everest has only a couple thousand people have ever summited it, and currently is about 7 billion people on the planet. So it is an absolute superhuman achievement, and for him to undertake that is really exciting. So guys, get on board and listen to this episode 26 of the JockX podcast with Tyson Poppelstone and myself, Jack. So welcome, Pop.
Jocko, good to be back.
Mate, awesome. You're the first man on the JockX podcast to go 3 episodes.
Oh, the hat trick.
Yes. Mate, this is record-breaking world news type stuff to have you back on.
That's exciting. It's good for me as well, bro.
Pumped. So you're episode 2, episode 9, and now you'll be episode 26.
Is it 26?
Yeah.
What month did we do that first one?
That was back around March, I think it was. March this
far
year.
Far out. So, this year's flying.
Yeah, I know. So 6 months worth of journey.
Yeah.
And man, I am honestly really pumped. We've got you in my house here and we're recording, and I know you've done so much, particularly between episode 9 and now. So that's a good 4 or 5 months. Mm. You've had some massive things come through and some really exciting things coming up. So we'll touch on a few of those. But man, give us an update. I'd love to hear about it. What's your spiel over the last 5 months?
Oh, well, where do you even start? I reckon it has been one hell of a ride. I think I said it last podcast, but for me, the journey to Everest was so aptly named. I could not think of a better name for this podcast, for this actual journey. The fact that it's such a journey. There's been so many twists and turns and ups and downs, but let me just give you a couple of the big ones. I'm not sure if last time I was on here, MacPac, Kathmandu's big rival, has signed up.
I don't think they
had signed up at that stage.
So MacPac, no, I don't think they had. So MacPac, they're kidding you out.
Fully fledged, they're kidding me out. So absolutely everything I'm going to be wearing on the mountain.
So they're going to bring you back alive, pretty much. they're the survival kit.
That's gotcha. Right. So they're on board. So they're a New Zealand-based company.
Can you show me your hands? So they're going to keep those things together.
That's
gotcha.
New Zealand-based company, massive in the adventure world. Super pumped to have them on board. Massive breakthrough to have them on board.
Yeah.
Super supportive. They're really backing me in, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But I think, all right, we both know the most exciting thing, probably for the viewers as well, is it today?
Yes.
By the time when this is released, I will have been on the footy show.
Yeah.
So the AFL footy show. So for the listeners, this is something that has just... me and you, Jocko, have been speaking about this for a long time.
Well, Tyce, we have a lot of listeners around the world. Give us a spiel about this. It's just a TV show in Australia we do. And for Aussie, in particular, Victoria and viewers and listeners, give them a spiel about it and what this actually is means.
Yeah, so the AFL footy season, week in, week out, we have an Australia-wide football show which covers all the hot news in footy. You got the big celebs from the footy world talking the ins and outs of what's going on. And earlier this year, I approached them with a fun little invite, which we can talk about in a couple of minutes. But basically, they loved it. About 6 months ago, it was supposed to happen. We were supposed to be on the footy show. I was pumped because the outreach that you have from this footy show is obviously ridiculous around Australia and streaming online, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Well, this is one of my favourite shows to watch weekly. I enjoy it. Been watching it since we were 10 years old.
That's right.
So, you know, you're going to see the great men on there. Gary, Jimmy, Brayshaw, and obviously the big fella.
It's going to be a good night out. I'm super excited they're having me on, but also it's going to be... I won't say too much. I'll encourage anyone who doesn't get to see it on the night to go back to Channel 9, check it all out, have a look at the replay, see how it was that we went. There's going to be a massive audience on the night. So exciting to be able to get the actual story out there a little bit more, get the story into every lounge room in Australia and around the world if you're watching, if you're streaming. So it's a massive... That is probably one of the biggest breakthroughs that we've had on this whole journey. What makes it even more exciting for me personally was it's supposed to happen earlier in the year. Got called off, obviously, with everything that happened in Nepal. And a few months...
So that got called off. Because you mentioned to me, last time we recorded, that was when the disaster, tragedy happened in Nepal.
Yeah.
The earthquake and, you know, so many people passed away and died and absolute devastation. And then you were actually, if I remember correctly, you were about 2 days away from going on this show to talk about what you're doing and your journey. And obviously that happened and they obviously pulled the pin because it was a bit inappropriate at the time.
Yeah, it was just in a bit of bad taste. So this is going back to May.
Yeah.
Thursday, I spoke to the producer of the footy show. He said, mate, we're excited to have you on. All the boys are excited. Next Thursday, you're locked in unless something crazy happens. Then 2 days later, the Saturday, was obviously this earthquake in Nepal and something crazy happened. I mean, you can't predict things like that. So obviously, it would have been in bad taste to have anything about Everest and Nepal in the sort of angle that we were going to be taking it on the show at that time. 6 months later, though, it's really difficult to explain it. I think one of the hard things is there's two sides to this story. Like, I don't want to talk about it as a positive thing just for me because obviously the devastation is still so real in Nepal, and that's one thing that I want to respect so much. But on a personal side of the journey, so great to be able to have the chance to actually be able to pump up my trip and talk about it and really get the message out there to Australia and anyone around the world who's listening.
Yeah, man, this is going to be absolutely sweet. So if you're listening to this, basically you would have seen Tyce on the TV show, which is going to be madness, which is awesome. But man, you've had some huge things happen. I've been to a couple of events. Tell us about your big night out. That was a great fundraiser we had and really getting your first big trip, because you're heading to, we'll talk about it in a second, but you're heading to Everest in about a month's time.
Yep.
But tell us about the fundraiser and the king.
Yeah, well, okay, so for all you listeners, I think you probably know, you've heard me speak about it before, that one of the biggest things that you got to encounter along the road to get into Everest is the 60,000 plus cost that you need to cover in order to get there. And obviously, we're doing a lot of work with sponsors and the media in order to be able to get that out there and get their names out there at the same time. But we thought we would have a fun little night with family and friends and anyone who was interested. So we organised a massive fundraiser at Harbour Kitchen down on the Docklands. Originally we thought, you know what, it'd be great to make $5,000 on the night, pay for the first trip that we're heading away to Nepal for, which, as you said, we'll speak about in a minute. But when we got there, the lady said, Tyson, we've got a capacity of 160 in the room. So automatically my ego kicked in and I thought, well, if there's 160 seats in the room, I'm not having 100 people. I need to organize 160 people. Yeah. So we really went on the grind just trying to get the word out there, trying to share this story about Wayne Carey, probably the best footballer who's ever played the game, best AFL footballer. Invited him along. He came. He delivered. He shared some amazing stories. He decked out the room. Everyone was excited to be there.
I love this. My partner, she's Canadian.
Yes.
And it's funny explaining to her who Wayne Carey was. So you folk who aren't Australia, who can't even speak right now. You folk who aren't Australian,
yes.
Wayne Carey is basically the Wayne Gretzky of AFL football. So if you're a Canadian or an American, I'm sure you know who that exactly is.
Well, I feel like I've just got a good taste of how Caitlin feels because I have no idea who Wayne Gretzky is.
Oh dear.
This just got confusing.
This is meltdown. So anyway, he's LeBron James of AFL football. So,
that's right.
Man, that I was there, obviously. Yeah. Loved it. The King was fascinating. And obviously, your uncle actually had an incredible story too with his rescuing out in the ocean during the disaster of 98.
Yeah.
To Hobart. But man, that was a great night.
It was good fun. It was really exciting to have the opportunity to even get Wayne Carey there. I remember earlier in the year, I had the idea that we might be able to get in touch with him, but I was a little bit unsure just because of the fact that we had to organise dates, we had to make sure he was free, and he's obviously very in demand. But the fact was, he hooked me up, and at the end of the night, I went and had a chat to him, and I said, mate, just let us know how we pay you or whereabouts we pay to. He goes, mate, don't even worry about it. You know, he really bought into the trip. He was really inspired by the trip, I think, the ethos behind it. But more than that, says something about the character of the bloke. You know, he really left on a high note, and everyone who left that place was
absolutely,
they loved the guy. And not only that, at the end of the night, he chucked the cherry on the top with the idea. He said, you know what, not only that, I'm going to organise you a $5,000 sponsor before the AFL grand final. So
amazing,
super excited for that, and just amazing to have someone like that on your side.
Oh, for sure. And from a sort of viewer, from like a person who's watching you closely on this journey, it is amazing that when you undertake such a huge challenge like climbing Everest, the people that get on board. So even a guy like Wayne, who's the pinnacle of sport, I'm sure he really, you know, gets excited about it, which is awesome. Bro, I really want to go right into, now you're obviously aligned with the Stroke Foundation.
Yes.
And your grandpa, I believe, actually passed away not 12 months ago.
Just under
12 months ago. So tell us about your association with them.
Well, pretty much, I'll start with my granddad. My granddad died. He was 82 years old. Lived a good, long life. But at the end of it, he had some health problems. And eventually, at the end of the ride, it came with a stroke. And I think a lot of people, when you hear about someone's granddad dying or one of the older generations of a family, you sort of just assume, okay, well, that's expected to happen. Obviously, they're getting a little bit older. But for me, it was so real. For me, it was the fact that I'd lost this guy who'd been there for my whole life just was super real. And it hit home. So even though he was 82 years old, this thing just got him. And for me, I sat next to him as he died. And I just sat there and you watch the life go out of this bloke that you've known for your whole life. And for me, I had this realization far out. I've heard people speak about the fact that this life, this thing ends eventually, and there's no point not having a crack at what it is that you want to have a crack at. And I think for me, first of all, that inspired me to really get serious about this mission, to really get serious about what it is that I wanted to do here.
So that really, back then, 12 months ago, got you... You were already thinking back then about aligning yourself with this and putting it together with your trip.
Well, for me, Everest was one of those things that was always in the back of my mind, and I kept saying, one day I'll do it, one day I'll do it. And I realised that eventually, after enough one days, there's no more days, you know what I mean? And my pa, just through passing away, showed that to me.
Yeah.
So I think as I left the hospital that day, I thought, far out, well, how many of these one day things am I going to hold on to and not actually act on? So that was a real driving point for me. So I got in touch, actually, with the National Stroke Foundation, because I thought, if I'm going to do this, I'm not just going to the top of a mountain to say, hey, look what I did.
Yeah.
I'm going to the mountain for a bigger cause than myself. And I thought, you know what, that's close to home. My uncle, he's 58, 59. He's had two strokes himself. So it's something that's close to the family.
Mm.
So I thought, what better cause to actually get behind that, something that's really impacted the family, something that's actually taken the life of someone I love so much, and try and support those guys on my big mission.
For sure. And just for listeners, what stroke foundation are you with? Is there a specific one?
It's the National Stroke Foundation. National Stroke Foundation.
So they would obviously accept donations and any sort of contributions listeners might want.
They would be so grateful
for it. Or they can go directly through you and go, the money can 100% go on to Stroke Foundation.
That's right. If you want to get in contact with me, TysonPopplestone.com, send me an email, give me a call, let me know. I can be the middleman for you if you wanted to, or I can just point you towards who to speak to so you don't have to go through a middleman. You can just get straight in touch with the National Stroke Foundation. But fantastic. We're trying to raise some good cash for them to do a great job that they're obviously doing throughout Australia.
Now, Tyce, I really want to go on to, we actually sat down over the weekend and saw this massive movie come out. This is real, because this is a true story, this movie.
Yeah.
Now, we obviously know it's done Hollywood up, but I sort of felt it was very genuine. I didn't feel like, you know when you watch the movie and you think, man, they just really put a bit of whipped cream on that, and that's the way to do it, Hollywood. I felt this was quite genuine. I felt like, I think that they filmed it, obviously, in Nepal. The trail looked all pretty genuine. I don't, obviously, at the top of the mountain, they weren't there, obviously, but overall, I felt like it was really true, and obviously the story's true.
Yeah.
Now, I really want to, like, we just touched on, your grandpa passed away, and, you and me both know, everyone knows, you can die straight away. Tell me about your feeling when you're watching this, and I know I'm ruining this for a few people, but they get to the top of the mountain, right?
Yeah.
And I, as a viewer of the movie, and I was sitting next to you where we watched it, and you think, geez, that looks amazing. They're doing, high-fiving, top of the world. It's incredible. You're in a little place that only, not the 1%, not the 0.1%, but the 0.000, there's 7 billion people and only, 1,000 or so have done it.
Yeah.
You get there, and then with them, and you think, as a viewer, you think this is amazing. And then finally, the weather rolls in when on the way down.
Yeah.
So, not really their fault. The weather looked fine. It was fine. They climbed up for 12 hours from base camp 4 to the top, and then on the 12 hour descent back to base camp 4 from the peak. Tell me about what your thoughts were when they really did nothing wrong, particularly the Asian lady, I can't remember her name, but I found her particularly did nothing wrong. She just walked to the top, walked back down, got caught in the storm, and she ended up dying. She's still sitting up there, 20 years later, nearly. How did you cope with watching something like that when you could be in the exact situation, same thing happening? You could get to the top, sunshine weather, and we know the weather is so volatile up there, it could change, and it's game over for you.
Mm. I felt like I cheated a little bit in the movie because I'd actually read the book that the movie was based on.
Yeah, okay.
What's it called? Into the Wind, or I can't remember. I should remember that anyway. It'll come to me in a minute. But I knew the end result.
Yeah.
And I saw that the movie was coming out. And I think sometimes when you read the book, sometimes to go and see the movie and put some actual images to what you've already sort of created in your mind can be really challenging. But I think as I sat down, I knew it was going to be in for a ride, and it was going to be confronting, because this is one of the biggest questions that keeps coming up on this journey to Everest. People say, Tyce, do you know what you're getting yourself into? And I think it's something I got to answer cautiously, but also confidently, because I've spoken to a lot of people who have climbed it. I've spoken to a lot of people in the mountaineering world, and these guys who are experienced ask me the question, do you know what it is that you're getting into? And I think, without having never actually climbed it myself, I've got to be honest and I've got to be cautious and say, well, maybe not to the extent that someone who's actually stood at the top of that mountain has. But I've also had the opportunity to speak to so many people and hear their story about the caution, about the training, about the little things that you need to do to give yourself the best opportunity to stand at the top of the mountain. And for me, seeing the movie was confronting, but it wasn't a surprise to me, because obviously I had seen it. But in saying that, I think what I found myself continually doing in the movie was putting myself in their shoes and thinking, far out, this is really real. But honestly, I think from earlier in this year when 20 lives, over 20 lives were lost on base camp at Everest, I think the reality of that situation so close to the time now, only 6 months ago, that was something that I think I wrestled with, what it is you're sort of getting me to ask myself now. I remember sitting there just thinking, is this something I can do? Is it something I want to do? Got my wife at home who I love and I want to come back to. Is it actually worth the challenge of putting myself in this position?
Because there's a part in the movie that probably the most moving part for me personally, I'm guessing probably for you too, and anyone who watches it, there's this part where Keira Knightley, who plays the wife of the main guy in the movie, yeah, and the guy's stuck up on the mountain. He's basically out of oxygen, sitting there freezing to death. And they end up connecting her onto the phone. And I honestly, because I know your beautiful wife, I could not stop picturing Jesse,
yeah,
your wife, doing the exact same thing,
yeah,
for you.
Yeah.
And it made me pretty emotional watching it. And I'm thinking, because you know this movie's real, this happened, like these things went down. And because I'm sitting against a guy who's doing the same thing, and I've known him for a long time, how was that for you? Or do you just, how do you cope with that sort of confronting scene, I guess? I know it's again a movie and I'm getting caught up in it, but I just sort of felt like it's fascinating that you could sit through something like this and just be like, brush it off and continue on.
Oh, yeah, that's a big question. I mean, you can't help but put yourself in the situation that they were in and imagine what it's like. And I think, honestly, if I wasn't being a little bit nervous and if we weren't asking these questions, I'd be crazy to go and attempt this mountain, because you need to know the dangers before you get there. But one thing, and as much respect as I want to give the mountain and understand in the end, it's going to have the last word. I mean, it's taken a lot of experienced mountain climbers' lives as well as the inexperienced. And I think one thing that I just have to be really, really focused on is the fact that, okay, the danger's real, but the opportunity of also succeeding is very real. I mean, it's taken a lot of lives, but a lot of people have climbed it. And I don't say that with arrogance, and I try and say that with as much humility as I possibly can, because there's no way I'm saying I'm definitely going to get to the top and I'm going to be safe. But what I am saying is I can't spend the next 6 or 8 months focusing on the fact that so many lives have been lost, because the moment things get hard, I start to panic. And I know what I'm like. If I'm careful, if I'm not careful, I'll get caught up focusing on the what if this happens.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to do at the moment is be real about the dangers that I'm facing, but also say to myself, Tyce, a lot of people have successfully climbed it. Though Mother Nature has the last word, a lot of technology's improved in the last 20 years to successfully take more climbers to the summit. Obviously, at the time it was filmed commercially, it had only become a real big thing in the last couple of years. But is that making sense? I don't want to go over there with this mindset and people thinking, oh, he's underestimating how hard it is, because I'm not. What I'm trying to do is appreciate the fact it's dangerous, but also focus on this opportunity to achieve a lifelong goal of mine.
No, I actually love that. And from a performance coach, I love the mindset, because that's probably exactly the answer you need to give. You need to, it's a bit like, I was reading the Ronda Rousey book the other day, and I think I might have mentioned before, but she talks about, well, she gets concerned when she's not feeling a little bit nervous, or her coach gets a bit concerned when she's not feeling a little bit nervous going into a fight, because that's when mistakes happen and you get a bit sloppy. So it is a good thing. You wouldn't want to get up there and be so confident strutting around because you know you want to be on 100%. Like you're a competitive athlete. You competed at world cross country and university cross country, and you know before your best races you're always a bit on edge.
Yeah,
exactly right. So I do love that. But it's interesting, I wanted to get your opinion on death.
Yeah.
And I know this is pretty confronting for the listeners now and talking about it, but I heard this cool quote the other day. It was, maybe if people were told when they were born that they were actually dying, they would go and chase after their dreams a bit more. Am I paraphrasing slightly there? But
still,
if you were told that you were dying right now,
which
we all are in a way, whether it be 10 years, 50 years, whatever it is, you are. Maybe if we were told that a bit more, you would go and chase after, you'd go for that job promotion, you would start the business, you would try and get on that sporting team, you would try and climb fucking Everest.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, tell me your thoughts on death, and I guess tying that in with the fact of, you know, we've got to have a crack.
Yeah. Oh, that is such a big question, and I wish Jessie, my wife, was here right now, because she knows how much I wrestle with this question. And I wrestle with it. In fact, it's funny, because just a little while ago, 6 months ago, I released a video about the fact that I'm not that scared of dying on Everest. But if I'm honest, I think death is something I personally have this really mixed relationship with the idea of death. Sometimes I feel so comfortable with the fact that we're going to die, and sometimes it scares the absolute crap out of me. Just the unknown. I think it's the unknown in everything that really scares me. But at the same point, you're right. Like, the fact is, once we're born, it's... And obviously, you know, a lot of people say, hey, you're living. But in reality, every second is getting closer to that inescapable point in our lives where it comes to an end, as we know it. And I think for me, I'm continually on this thin line of chasing my dreams and knowing that in the end, no matter how big I fail, this thing that we all live in so comfortably is going to come to an end. And I don't know what it is. I was actually speaking to Craig Mottram about a year ago, and he said, just whenever I get too stressed about something, I just remind myself, don't worry, you're going to die. And for me, there's some weird kind of comfort in that idea, because I think Steve Jobs said it in some way.
Yeah,
some
I was
going
to say that. He talks about, you know, no one's ever escaped this thing called death, or no one's ever come up with a pill, or no one's come up with a way of avoiding it. It is inevitable. Mm. You know, cleans out the old, brings in the new.
Yeah.
And he says, well, you might as well, you know, do something you love.
Yeah.
And it's interesting you talk about it, because some people talk, right, they'll listen to this now and go, right, quit my job tomorrow, I'm going to go surf for the rest of my life. Yeah, I mean, or something like that. We don't mean do that. We mean start to make the shift, because it's not going to happen overnight. Like, you're not going to get the ideal life. And this is going off, actually, we're opening a whole can of worms here and what a whole things we could talk about.
Yeah.
But we'll keep back with the fact that you're going to die.
Yeah.
So, if you had to summarise what you mean in regards to dealing with the thought of you're going to die.
Yeah.
How would you say that? What would you say in summary?
So let me just make sure I'm answering the question. Are you, in regards to my trip to Everest?
Well, just in regards to, in general, the fact that you are going to die.
Yeah.
And going after what you really want to achieve. Like, you're chasing Everest, which is, you know, crazy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, talk to the listeners about your mindset.
Mm.
And how you view death, basically.
Yeah. Far out. I really wish Jessie was here, because she has such a comforting and confident view on death. She's not scared of it. She's not worried about it. She's really at peace with the fact it's going to happen. It just does not bother her. But for me, as I said, I go through this weird sort of phase of letting it scare me and then letting it motivate me, letting it scare me. And I don't know what people believe about why we're on this planet, but I have this really firm belief that I want to be driven by love. I want to be driven by impacting as many people on the planet as I can. And I heard a quote a little while ago which spoke about the fact that we're on this planet to put our biggest passion into action where the world's biggest hope is. Where the world's most desperate point is. So I need to use my passion to intersect with the world needs me to intersect, where there's a pain, where there's a longing. And I feel like in this limited span of time that we have on this planet, maybe motivated by the fact that eventually it's going to come to an end, that I'm required to put my passion, I have a few of them, into action to intersect and inspire and motivate and help and give hope to the world's greatest need. Because we all know that there's anxiety and depression and stress and uncertainty and lack of purpose, and there's so many things that people are dealing with right now. And if on my time here I can maybe point them to what I believe this whole life is about, which, to be honest, I continually probably, you know, ebb and flow on my idea of what that is, but if I can help these people unpack gifts and talents to have the same impact on other people's lives then for me, that's a success. And I think death in that regard motivates me to get onto it quicker, because as you said, like, it's not getting any further away. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does.
I wish I could give something that's more clear and more amazing, but the fact is, it's something that if you ask me tomorrow, and if you ask me in a different situation or in a different mood, I think my answer would change. And this is just me. This is me thinking out loud, and I obviously haven't got my thoughts in a nice little package. I feel like I'm just saying words, but this is where I'm at with that question, you know.
But you know what? I think it's probably totally okay to be like that about this topic.
Yeah.
I don't think there needs to be a certain answer, because no one, there is no certain answer.
Mm.
And in this case, there's no certain answer for us individually.
Mm.
It'll probably change day to day. And
yeah.
I think right here, right now, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty okay with it being not okay. You know what I mean? Like, but I think it's just been cool again to be aware that that is going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, it does a bit like Craig Mochin, the superstar athlete you're talking about. You know, it just does bring you back a little bit. You're like, I spilt coffee on my shirt.
What would you say to that question? I'm just interested now, because I feel like I've sort of just made a mockery of that answer. But I'm interested. What would you respond to that? I'm just curious.
What's the question? So how do you want to put it?
So how does death motivate you to live life to the fullest? Sorry to switch that on you. I'm just really curious to find out your thoughts.
Well, it's probably something I've sort of thought a little bit about more recently, I think. Just so I know it touched around a bit. For me, for starters, I am, as you know, planning to... I want to live for quite a long time.
Yeah.
So I'm really sort of starting making adjustments into my lifestyle to get maximum distance, because I feel like I've got a lot to do on this planet.
Yeah.
I think I've got a lot to give, like yourself.
Yeah.
And we want to, you know, create, you know, the best in the world type stuff. So I sort of feel like I need some time to do those things. I don't want to be a flash in the pan. But that's another story. But I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I think. I know it's easy to talk tough, and talk's always better than, is not as good as action, but... I think I'm more than okay. And it's even the other day, I was in these V8 race cars, right? So I was in with one of the star champion drivers in Australia, and we did a couple of laps around Sandown race course here.
Yeah.
We're going about 300k an hour and stuff around the corner. It's pretty crazy. And just before I hopped in, I'm a bit nervous. I'm getting a bit jumpy around. I'm wearing it. They're putting helmets on you and this sort of stuff. I'm thinking, this is a bit serious, putting a helmet on in the car. And I thought, you know what? If we die, we die.
Yeah.
I know it sounds, I don't want to make it too dramatic, but that's exactly what I said to myself. I thought, you die, and you're not going to. You're driving around a V8 course, and I've done it a million times before with different clients and so forth. But I thought, you know, there's a chance. They just misjudge a corner, go straight into the wall, and you get collected up. But I remember saying to myself, we die, you die. And I say that to myself a little bit on a few things. And I think it just gives you that ability, but when you jump out of an aeroplane, or, you know, we've done bungee jumping, or, you know, whether you're even ride a motorbike and you're going up a steep bank,
just
or jumping
a jump.
Something crazy. Or you're surfing a big wave, or whatever it is. Like, I think when you have that sort of mentality, you're not sort of scared. It untaps the power. And I don't like being afraid of things.
Yeah.
And therefore, when you give it a less power or less afraid, this might be a long bow to pull, but again, I'm just literally have finished Ronda Rousey's book.
Yeah.
But there's a point where she actually goes into a magazine and she actually poses basically naked. It just sort of shows not wearing much. And she did it because she reckons in future someone's going to get a photo of her naked and then put it outline, and they're going to make a lot of money off her, and she's going to be embarrassed and this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So she thought, I'm not going to be scared of that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out and do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to get my kid off and do it. And I thought, that's kind of cool. Because she's just facing that fear, and like, we all fear that. I'd be horrible. I'd imagine the plaster of the world naked.
Yeah.
Like, I've got a perfect body. No.
for the average Joe.
Yeah, for the average Joe, no.
Yeah.
So that's basically what I'm saying is, it sort of doesn't give it the power.
Yeah.
And I don't like things having power over me.
Mm.
So that's what my thing would be. And again, we've gone for a long time about this, but that's probably the biggest thing for me. It's not giving it the power.
Yeah.
And then, therefore, not giving it the power, therefore, you can undertake these things without worrying about it. You just go for a walk through a hospital.
Yeah.
And you'll see people who just get hit by something out of the blue.
Yeah.
you know, go for a walk. I do it. You go through, walk through a graveyard and just look around. This is where you're going to end up.
Yeah.
You're going to end up 6 foot under.
Yeah. I actually went to a Buddhist school about a few months ago, just for a couple of classes, because I was really interested to hear what the actual teacher had to say in general. But one thing that really sticks with me, he says, okay, imagine in front of you, you have a stack of 100 things in your life. Got to do the dishes. Want to get married. Want to have a good job. Whatever your list is. Just 100 things. He says, and on either side of those lists, you've got a bucket that says, can't change. And you've got a bucket that says, I can change. And he says, as you go through that list of things, want to have a clean house, you put that into your bucket of, I can change. He says, but what so many people do is they get caught up just looking at the list and getting so worked up about why it hasn't happened yet, how they're going to make it, how stressed they are by it. He says, it doesn't change the fact. He says, you've got two options. He goes, you can either put it in your can change it bucket and you don't need to worry about it because you can change it. You have the capacity to change it. You have the means to change it. He goes, or you put it in your can't change it bucket, something you might be stuck with, the reality of death, for example. He goes, you can spend your whole life worrying about it. He goes, but the fact is that you can't change it.
What's a can't change it example?
So can't change, for example, we're all going to die.
Yep.
You can't change the fact. Say in your life, you spend a lot of time freaking out about, crap, one day I'm going to die. Okay, so you're right, one day I'm going to die. Can you change? No, you can't change. It's got to go in your can't change it bucket. He says, regardless of your mindset on the can't change stuff, he goes, as worried as you ever get about that, it's never going to change. So there's really no point worrying about it. What's your worry going to do? He says, but then with the other ones, there's no point worrying about that because it's gone in your can change it bucket. And I thought that was really powerful. And it's something that I use a lot on this subject of death and other things. But I think that's really motivating for us to put our passions into practice because of the fact that death always goes into that I can't change this bucket. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be applied with so many things because I think naturally I've got the kind of mindset, I don't want to say naturally actually, I think a lot of the time I get caught up looking at all the possibilities and sometimes within all those possibilities there's the anxiety that comes up with the potential result of some of them. And for me, this whole little metaphor of, okay, well, I can't change it, I can change it, is so helpful because it just helps me see things in perspective for what they really are and how much of a capacity I have to change them. And I think just on this whole subject of death, I find that really comforting on this topic, though it's still something I wrestle with.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like that. I think I'm like every listener here just pondering that for a second.
Yeah.
I want to pass on now to this part of the interview we're doing right now. There are a lot of people out there, and I think as you get closer and closer to going to Everest, there's going to be people really start to put the heat on you and question your pedigree, why you're doing this, why are you putting your family through this, why are you spending all this money on this, you know, who says you can make it to the top, these sorts of things. I guess for starters, like, what right do you have thinking you can climb this mountain when you've never climbed anything before?
Yeah, I honestly think that is, it's such a valid question. And anyone who's looking at me and asking that question, I seriously welcome the question because I know, for example, speaking specifically about Mount Everest, it's turned into a commercial market. It's turned into something where anyone with enough money can just go and pay it and basically get carried up the mountain with a Sherpa. And I welcome that question because the fact is...
They don't get carried up by a Sherpa.
They don't get carried up, but pretty much they get their bags. And it's basically not a walk in the park, but it's as easy as you can possibly make it. And it's basically just ticking something off a bucket list because you got the money to do it. And a lot of people get frustrated about those people. And so they should, because the fact is, I think when you look at the size of Everest and the danger of Everest and the reality of the fact that it is bloody hard to climb... Just because you got the money, it should not enable you to have the freedom to go and climb it. So I think the question that you've asked me is something that a lot of people have asked me, like, okay, well, who the hell am I to climb this mountain? And I think, well, not you asking me, but I think the people that you're asking on behalf of who've started to fire those questions a little bit, I can answer that in a few ways. I think first and foremost, I haven't done a lot of climbing. But I got a lot of faith in the fact that the people that I'm training with at the moment who have done a lot of climbing, they know me well, They know the work I'm doing. They know the altitudes I'm training at a heap of times a week. They know how, they know my background. They know the fact that I'm happy to push through some pain. I'm also happy to work very hard to get the money in line to get over there. It's not something that I've just got 60 grand sitting in the bank, so I'm going to go and do this. It's something that I'm working bloody, bloody hard to go and do. But I'm not sure it's fair to say that only seasoned mountaineers should be allowed to attempt this mountain, because a lot of seasoned mountaineers have been taken by the mountain. And a lot of people who probably shouldn't have stood at the summit have stood at the summit.
Yeah.
And that's not to discredit the mountain, and that's not to discredit any mountaineers who are listening to this going, who is this guy? But all I'm saying is the fact that I don't think it's fair to say you're ever qualified enough to stand at the summit of Everest, because the fact is, it has the last word. It has the last say.
It's probably a good point there. That's probably sums it up in a way, doesn't it?
Mm.
No one's ever really qualified enough in a way. Mm. So you, like you said, we watched the movie again a couple of days ago.
Yeah,
they were seasoned. The guy had been there 3 times already.
That's not to say I'm not doing everything I can to get ready for this mountain. I'm training twice a day, every day, and that's only going to get longer and more intense as we lead up to the mountain. I'm going to be pumping the altitude chambers that I'm working in, because that's the best thing I've got to use while I'm in Australia. But we're also going to go over to Everest a little early, and we're going to take it slow, and we're going to let our bodies adjust. And if I get to a point where my guide, who's climbed it 3 times, third time almost to the top without oxygen, tells me that, Tyce, that's enough, you're not ready, I turn straight around, because the fact is, I know what I got at home is worth so much more than what standing at the top point of the mountain will ever mean to me.
So just in a timeline for folks listening, so this podcast obviously coming out in late September, you are going to climb, the real attempt's going to be, you're leaving about late March,
yes,
and you'll be spending about 6 to 8 weeks up there, so you're climbing to the top of Everest in May sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're also doing a training trip to Nepal and to the Everest region in November for 4 weeks. That's 4 weeks straight of climbing some of the biggest peaks through there. So you know, and I will know, that there's still going to be people coming out and really thinking, you know, why should you be going and these sorts of things. So I guess in a way, in terms of dealing with that, what are sort of things do you do to deal with that? Because, you know, some days they catch you on a good day and you can, you know, you talk the talk back. But some days when you're having a low day and you might have, something might have gone wrong, we all have those sorts of days. How do you prepare yourself to sort of deal with that? Or how, you obviously have probably had those days in the past.
Yeah.
What are your sort of steps and strategies to overcome people who just want to doubt you all the time?
Mm.
And they sometimes catch you when you're feeling a bit low. Yeah. So it makes it a bit harder. And then, what do you do in that situation?
I guess I got to answer that question at a number of different levels. I think first and foremost is the fact that I deserve to be questioned. I expect questions. And if I wasn't being questioned, I think I'd need to reassess my goal, because if people are just going to accept the fact that I'm setting this big target, then for me, it's probably not big enough. I deserve to be under that questioning, because as we've said, there's a lot of professional mountaineers who make calls, and a lot of them rightly so, on who should be able to try and who shouldn't be able to try. I can understand where they're coming from, because this is their guy's life and they know how serious it is, and they've stood there, and I'm happy to hear from them, I'm happy to listen to them. I also have to remind myself that Kevin Fairbrother, the guy that I'm going with, fully backs me in, and he says that, Tyce, if you can handle the trip in November that we're going to be able to go on, you're going to be a lot more able to handle the big trip to the top of Everest next year. He says, in fact, he won't take anyone to Everest who can't successfully complete the trek that he's taken us in November. So I think I get a lot of confidence from the fact that if I successfully come home from the first trip and I've satisfied what he expects me to satisfy, I'm in a good spot to do it. I also think there's another category where people just want to hate on you. These are the ones that actually piss me off, and these are the ones that I'm not really that interested in hearing from. The seasoned mountaineer, please talk to me. Please ask me the hard questions, because I feel like I've got good answers and I've got a good place to be able to speak to them from. The ones that piss me off are the people who... and I've got to be careful, because in a way I feel sorry for these people. People who can never imagine going out to the level that I'm actually going out to and trying to achieve this lifelong goal, because it is ridiculous. It's the biggest mountain in the world. It's dangerous. But I feel like these people, they're not asking out of a real interest for my safety. They're not asking for out of a real passion to see me do well. They're asking just because they feel like they've maybe never got to a point in their life where they can achieve a great thing, and they're just trying to bring me down to their level. That's a group, It's not that I don't want to talk to them. Maybe, in fact, I want to inspire them to break out of that mindset that they're stuck in, because it's a little bit sad. But I think, you know, depending on the category of person, depending on the type of person who's asking me the question, is going to really dictate how I respond to the question that they're asking. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, man. I love that answer. I think you covered it on all bases. Mate, I love that. Well, we're coming towards the end. We've had, you know, a great chat here today, and you know, there's going to be thousands of people listening to this podcast. Yeah. This is going to travel around Australia and all around the world. I want to finish off with a few words, a few words of wisdom, we'll call it.
Yeah.
We'll call them the Tyson Poppy Popplestone wisdom moment. That's made up. Aptly named.
That was a very good introduction to this segment.
It's ridiculous. We may edit this out. If you had some words, final words of wisdom,
mm-hmm.
to all the listeners across the globe. Now, listeners, listen carefully. How many times can you say listen in a sentence?
As many as you want.
Yeah. Give us your words of wisdom, Tyus, to take us out, and for all the listeners who have tuned in for this and are following your journey. Now, just on that, people obviously following your journey. You're on Facebook on Tyson Popplestone. Now, that is spelled PopPlestone.
Yes.
Good. You're on Instagram.
Yes, under the same name.
Tyson Popplestone.
Yep.
Twitter.
@popstar_1.
_1. Might have to rewind that one. And obviously your website,
TysonPopplestone.com.
So
with the links to all those social media pages from my website, all very clear. So if you want to get in touch with me on social media, just go to TysonPopplestone.com, click the links. That'll be the best way to do it.
Beautiful. Love it. TysonPopplestone.com. Now, I expect you guys all to get on that and have a quick look and listen and give him some likes and love, and make sure we get some real feedback. And Tyson would love to hear from you.
Yeah, awesome. Sounds good. Words of wisdom?
Words of wisdom.
Words of wisdom. I feel like I got a couple of little bits of wisdom, a few little nuggets. Ready? Here goes. No particular order. Systems have been created by so many people who are no smarter than you, that tell you that this is the way that you have to live, and these are the steps that you have to take in order to achieve your goal. Right now, I feel like I'm going through a phase where those systems don't have as much excitement. They don't motivate me. They don't really do anything for me. In fact, in my own life, I've started to realize that I believe the passion, the talent, the abilities that I've got don't need to be confined to a system. Never believe that you have to sit in a job that you hate because that's what you've been told you have to do. Never to sit in an office because that's what people have told you your ability has amounted to. I think for me, the most important bit of advice I've ever heard is the real game changers, the real life changers in this world are no smarter than me, they're no smarter than you. They've just found what they're passionate about and they've tried to master it. And I think if there's one thing that I could leave the audience with, and one thing that I'm learning in my own life right now, it's don't just be stuck in a system because it's what you've been told you have to do. Really step out, spend the time to get clear on what your actual talents, your abilities, your dreams are, and just give them a crack. That's a big, long, nuggety bit of wisdom, but I feel like there's a lot of truth in it.
Mate, I love that. Appreciate you coming on.
It's good to be back.
Episode 3 of our little trilogy. Now, folks, again, episode 2, episode 9, now episode 26. Man, loving your effort. Good luck with this going on the show.
Yes.
Good luck with your trip coming up. We'll do an episode maybe when you get back from this Everest train trip. So in a couple of months, we'll have to catch up, give the folks an update. Guys, keep an eye on the podcast here. We'll get him back on. And man, we'll keep smashing it. Loving your work. And looking forward to seeing you at the top and for our finale one day in 6-12 months time, when we'll talk about how, what kind of ice is on top of Everest?
I'll bring some home for you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm going to talk about if you can give me a wave from up there or something. Something ridiculous like that. All right.
Thanks, brother.
Cheers.
So there you have it, folks. Episode 26 with Tyson Popplestone. That guy is an absolute star, and man, I love having you on the show. He brings plenty of energy, and I hope you really enjoyed that one. Just like me, listen to it again. It's great to get a lot out of that guy. He knows a lot, and he's undertaking a massive journey. So make sure if you really want to support him, get onto his page, TysonPopplestone.com, and at least let him know that you're supporting him. And if you got some, want to make a donation, then go ahead and do that, or if you want to sponsor as well. So, man, exciting journey for him, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about the episode. So make sure you jump on to my Facebook page, Elite Team Leadership, or Instagram, Twitter, same again, Elite Team Leadership, and tell me what your thoughts are. Did you love it? Maybe hashtag pop to the top. Jump on and do that if you love the episode. So just tag me and tag pop to the top, and I'll definitely respond, because that guy is an absolute star, and I really hope that he has a successful journey. We'll definitely have to get him back on, maybe after he comes back from his first Nepal training trip in November, and we'll get an update from him prior to taking off on the big one early next year. So, guys, hope you enjoyed episode 26. I'm really looking forward to episode 27 as well. Got an amazing one coming up for you folks to really take your games to the next level and empower your greatness. So have a great week. See you soon. We'll be right back.